64.245, which is criminal trespass in the second degree, a Class C misdemeanor. It doesn't, by the language, present language, apply to criminal trespass while in possession of a firearm, which is a Class A misdemeanor. And that would seem to be the problem that's addressed.
All right. Mm. Okay. Thank you. All right. Now let's turn back here to Senate Bill 257. And Pete Sandrock, you were ready to go a minute ago.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Pete Sandrock representing the Oregon District Attorneys Association. Bill Gary and I had intended to testify together on this issue. However, I think he's already departed. Some background. When a defendant, during a single criminal episode, violates several statutes, such as a burglary with intent to commit rape, or injures several victims, such as the drunk driver whose actions result in the death or injury of several people, or the defendant who violates the same statute repeated times against the same victim, when that individual is convicted, it creates a problem for the courts in trying to decide how many judgments can be entered. In other words, the DA can charge as many offenses as appear to exist within the criminal episode. The jury can find the defendant guilty of as many of those offenses as the jury deems appropriate, but the court doesn't know whether to enter multiple judgments and multiple sentences. The courts tell us that they don't know what to do because whether multiple sentences are authorized in a single criminal episode, the courts believe, has to be defined by what the legislative intent is. The courts try to define that legislative intent, but frequently find it lacking. And for example, the Oregon Court of Appeals in the 1981 case, in dealing with the issue of multiple crimes within a single criminal episode, said, "We reiterate that legislative intent in these cases is at best unclear and at worst non-existent. Trial and appellate courts have been struggling with these questions for a decade or more. The descriptive term that's usually applied to these problems, although it is not legally and technically correct, but nevertheless it's referred to in shorthand as a merger problem. When the court's deciding whether to merge those multiple offenses within the single criminal episode, cannot figure out what it was the legislature intended, the courts apply a rule of statutory construction known as the rule of lenity. And that rule of lenity says that we will therefore assume that the legislature intended the most lenient of consequences that can be interpreted from these circumstances. In other words, the court should merge the multiple convictions into one offense and apply one penalty. Now, this problem has had a long history, and in the written testimony that Mr. Geary has provided you, he traces that history back as far as 1969. But for your purposes here today, I simply would call your attention to the fact that prior to the 1983 session, the Joint Interim Committee on the Judiciary's Task Force on Sentencing tried to resolve the merger question. Senators Brown and Wires of this committee were members of that Task Force on Sentencing. That Task Force on Sentencing could not resolve the issue. During the 83 session, there was introduced in the House a measure substantially similar to Senate Bill 257. Representative Hardy Myers worked long and hard with all of the interested parties to try to craft a bill that met as many of the concerns of prosecution and the defense and the courts as possible. Substantial agreement was reached, at least on portions of the bill. There still are substantial areas of disagreement between the prosecution and the defense. But nevertheless, the ultimate form that bill took is much the same as the bill you have before you now. That bill, however, in the last session, was essentially held hostage in House Judiciary, basically over a threat that it would be used as a vehicle to attach a minority report on the death penalty to get it out to the floor. In the waning moments of the session, the merger portions of Senate Bill 257 and the consecutive sentencing portions of 257 were lifted out and put in as amendments to Senator Brown's bill on elderly abuse, which was then before House Judiciary.
We just sent that bill off for you to use again.
We're looking at it again.
Great.
Thank you, Senator.
3 weeks from now, come back.
It then came back in conference committee.
It's funny how these things just keep coming back.
And they'll keep coming back, too. So.
The conference committee then...
can't even have different hostages. Kidnapped the same bill over and over.
Then concurred in the House amendments. It went to the floor, and frankly, in the dying moments of the session, this bill also died. And I think there were two reasons for it. I think, one, there was a feeling that the full Senate Judiciary Committee had been deprived of an opportunity to review in any detail this important measure. And second, I think that there were concerns about what the bill would do to prison crowding. And I'd like to address each of those issues. First of all, what does the bill do in terms of merger? It says, first of all, that if a defendant in a single criminal episode violates multiple statutes, and those statutes require proof of an element that the other statute does not, then there can be as many separately punishable convictions as there are statutory violations. For example, that would mean the defendant who commits a burglary with intent to commit theft could be convicted of both the burglary and the consummated theft. The same is true of the defendant who commits a burglary and an attempted rape, can be convicted of both offenses. One of the reasons that is important is now, if a prosecutor has obtained convictions for a burglary and an attempted rape arising out of a single criminal episode, hypothesizing the defendant who has broken into somebody's house attempted to rape the occupant but was scared off, the DA is put in the difficult posture of selecting one of those two charges upon which the judge will impose judgment in sentence. What's the choice? The choice is between the Class A felony burglary in the first degree or the Class B felony attempted rape in the first degree. Obviously, the attempted rape in the first degree more adequately labels the offender than does the burglary, but it carries a substantially lesser penalty. Secondly, the merger portion of the bill would say that when there are multiple victims of a criminal act, there can be as many separately punishable offenses as there are victims, except that if you're talking about property crimes and a piece of property, like a car, for example, is the subject of a theft or a criminal mischief or an unauthorized use, and there are two people who jointly own that vehicle, you still only have one victim for purposes of merger. You don't multiply your victims by counting up the number of people who own joint interests of a particular piece of property.
What about when you steal a car and there's a toolbox inside the car, and so you charge the person with theft of a vehicle and theft of a toolbox and unauthorized use of a motor vehicle? And what else could you find in that situation? And that's what you can do, isn't it? And that's what you do now, and under this bill, well, you'd be able to...
If I understand your question, defendant steals car and there are multiple pieces of property in it.
Personal property in the car, then the thief can be charged with a separate offense for every single item of personal property belonging to a different person, the State versus Gilbert, right?
Yes.
Okay. The only thing now is that you can't sentence him consecutively for all these things, but you certainly apparently can charge him with all those.
He can be charged.
Yeah.
He would not be convicted, however. The jury may find him guilty, but then the court would apply a merger doctrine and it would all be combined in a single theft.
I just don't understand why it's so extremely necessary now to figure out every statute that a person violates in the course of a single criminal act and charge that person with every one of those. You know, we didn't used to have this problem. And what caused it to come about? It used to be that when a person robbed a bank, he got charged with armed robbery. And he can get charged with all these other things that go along with it. The person committed rape, he got charged with that. And if a person was charged with a murder, he was charged with murder. He wasn't charged with murder, assault with a dangerous weapon, trespass, driving around the influence. Something happened between... In the 1960s, I guess, based on the date that you told me this all started to fall down on, it's about 1969, what was it that happened that created this problem and did not exist before 1969?
I can't tell you what it might have been. It seems to me that there still would have existed the problems of merger. What if your bank robber kidnapped an employee of the bank? Bank robber probably would have been charged with both robbery and kidnapping.
Right.
Since the robber took the teller's car to get away, it probably would have been an unauthorized use.
That's probably right, and that's probably, yeah, it would have been.
And those are the sorts of situations that we still deal with today.
Okay, well, now the difference in the situations I explained was that it was one act that apparently violated several different statutes, and that a guy kidnaps somebody at the bank and steals a car. I think I don't have any problem with the three charges there, and in fact consecutive sentences if you want to go that far. I don't have a kind of a problem with that situation, but what bothers me is the single act that violates multiple statutes, and somewhere in time prosecutors decided that they should break all this into component parts, and now you're here because you want to get a separate sentence for each one of the component parts. Consecutive sentence at that.
Not necessarily, and we want to make it clear that our only purpose in being here is not just to ensure that we can get people indiscriminately in prison for longer and longer periods of time. We do want to get some people in prison for longer and longer periods of time, that's true, and we confess to that intent. But there are other objectives here as well.
Okay, let's start with the first objective. Give me a situation where you would like to incarcerate somebody for a longer period of time that you can't in the present law.
Well, the one case that I cited to you of the defendant who has committed a burglary and an attempted rape, we certainly would want that. And that's a case of separate statutory violations which involve separate elements. Multiple victim cases would be the drunk driver who has killed or injured more than one person. We think that there are appropriate cases in which the defendant ought to suffer increased penalty for the additional victims.
You know, there's probably one person in 100 victim of negligent homicide that gets 5 years now. And so you get defendants, and I had a bunch of them. Senator Fraley remembers them. He was fortunate enough not to be on the other side in those negligent homicide cases, but a lot of them, where I had 2, 3, 4 victims in a car. You know, they all got probation now. Today they wouldn't get probation, but I doubt that any one of them would get 5 years either. So you kill 4 people in a car for this act of negligent homicide. And if I thought the courts were sitting there waiting for the legislature to do something so that they could give that person 20 years, I'd say maybe you got something going and we need the legislation. But I don't see judges doing that.
Senator, I think we have to uncouple the issue of merger from the issue of consecutive sentencing first. I think that's important. It's important, first of all, because it is, in our view, essential that the record of conviction clearly state that this defendant has committed 4 counts of manslaughter in the second degree or negligent homicide.
4 counts, I agree.
Now, whether or not that defendant ought to serve consecutive sentences on that, then has to meet the test applied in this bill. And there may indeed be cases in which consecutive sentences are not appropriate. I suspect there are a number of them. But also there are cases of the defendant who has multiple prior DUIs and so forth, that multiple consecutive sentences are indeed appropriate. I suppose one of the important aspects of this to remember is that this bill does not mandate a particular action by a court. But what we're doing is we're giving both the court more room to work with, broader discretion, in the sense that there will potentially be more sentences to work with. We're doing the same thing for the parole board. They will, in making their own independent judgments, have more potential sentences to work with. Now, it may be that the judge will say, this case isn't appropriate for consecutive sentencing. Or if the judge says it is, the parole board can turn around and say, no, it is not. We're going to unstack these consecutive sentences. Because remember, the parole board not only has that authority, but will soon have the authority to make bed space and express consideration to maintenance. So all of these issues, I think, can factor in here. And then, if we go on for a moment, we've got the multiple statute violation, the multiple victim violation, and then repeated violations of the same statute against the same victim. Now, this bill would permit separate convictions, separate judgments, only if each repeated violation were separated by a sufficient pause to give the defendant an opportunity to renounce his or her criminal intent. It goes one step further and it addresses specifically the rather offensive principle of State versus Garcia, which held that in a single criminal episode, when the defendant violated the sodomy statute in 3 different ways over a 40-minute period of time, those 3 offenses merged into 1. And this bill would say that for each different manner in which a victim is sodomized or is sexually penetrated with a foreign object, each of those necessarily amounts to a separate conviction. Trying to apply those rules then to provide the court with that framework for a merger, then the bill goes on and tries to establish
criteria for imposition of consecutive sentences. And I think it's important to understand that even if a defendant is convicted of burglary, theft, rape, and robbery, and the judge imposes 20 years on each of those offenses, if those are concurrent sentences, the defendant only serves what he otherwise served if one single 20-year sentence were imposed. So the impact on the defendant in terms of time incarcerated is not greater just because there have been more judgments entered against him. Then you get to the question of whether the court is going to impose consecutive sentences. And in that regard, the bill establishes standards, requires the court to make findings on the record. And those findings would be, first, that either the separate statutory violations were not merely an incidental violation of a separate statute in the course of the commission of a more serious crime, but rather was an indication of the defendant's willingness to commit more than one criminal offense during that single criminal episode. Make that finding, or alternatively, if the court were to find that the offense for which the consecutive sentence is contemplated caused or created a risk of causing greater or qualitatively different loss, injury, or harm to the victim than was caused by the other offense. Once the court makes either one of those findings, then in addition, the court must find that concurrent sentences would not be commensurate with the seriousness of the total course of the defendant's conduct during that criminal episode, or that the public would not be adequately protected by a concurrent sentence. Now, please understand that right now, courts are not constrained in any way whatsoever in their authority to impose consecutive sentences. This would impose those restraints and require that those findings be made as a matter of record. We would anticipate that there would be litigation on the adequacy of findings, and that the courts would, over a period of time, give more meaning to the bare bones of the statute. But we think that that's appropriate. Now, in terms of...
Well, just a second. I'm thinking about what you just said. Okay, somebody robs the corner grocery store at high noon for 4 days in the week. Each day at noon, he goes in and robs the store. Different stores, the same store. Now, under this bill, in that situation, obviously he would have committed separate crimes.
Yes, sir.
Subject to separate convictions. Does the judge, even in that circumstance, have discretion to make the sentences all concurrent?
Yes.
That's the present law, and this wouldn't change that.
That would not change the present law. This would not affect the ability to impose concurrent or consecutive sentences when you're dealing with offenses that arise out of separate criminal episodes. Present law remains.
The main thing this bill does, as I understand it, it would allow a court to impose consecutive sentences for separate violations arising out of the same criminal episode.
That's correct. Now, understand that there are various kinds of cases which today can result in multiple criminal convictions out of the same criminal episode. For example, the Garcia case that I referred to a moment ago, defendant was charged with rape, kidnapping, and 3 counts of sodomy. The rape and kidnapping were upheld as separately punishable offenses, along with one of the sodomy charges. Under present law, the court would not have to make any special findings in order to impose the consecutive sentences that were imposed in that case. Under this bill, the court would now have to make those findings.
Why do you want to do that?
Mm-hmm.
That's part of it. But also, we recognize that there are limited correctional resources. And we want the decision-making process in terms of who's going to take up those resources to be as rational as possible. And we think that these criteria for deciding who's going to get the consecutive sentences injects a necessary element on the record of rationality that does not necessarily currently exist. In other words, the people who would be getting consecutive sentences, we would hope, would be the ones who most richly deserve those consecutive sentences.
I think this is a good bill. I think they've really perfected it over the years in terms of trying, because I think a lot of the objections in the past have been the concern that, particularly because the behavior of judges varies so much in terms of their sentencing patterns, so to put that kind of thing, I think it is. I think the district attorneys have realized in the past the kind of opposition. They're probably still the opposition to the bill, but in dealing with that, I wasn't being cynical about saying it's a trade-off. I mean, I think, you know, it's a compromise process, and I think this is an effort to try to make some compromise from some of the earlier bills in terms of recognizing some of the problems with unbridled discretion on consecutive sentencing.
She suggested something that you didn't say, but which occurred in my mind while you were talking. Is a part of the purpose of that to make the judges more likely to be consistent in when they give a consecutive sentence? Are you trying to cure the claim that gross difference between judges and whether they use consecutive sentences or not?
I would hate to appear in a public forum and criticize the judiciary.
Well, I use the word claim.
Well, certainly we would not. We would do everything that we could to avoid any unfair claims against the judiciary that they are guilty of those offenses. He said quickly. To address the prison crowding issue, first of all, we do not believe that this bill will put more people into prison. And we say that for this reason. Under present law, when the defendant is convicted of multiple offenses and the judge orders them merged, the DA selects which offense the sentence is going to be imposed upon. And obviously, we're going to take the offense generally with the greatest possible penalty. And if the judge thinks that this person is a candidate for a prison, either because of the nature of the offense or the offender's prior record, then that judge today is putting that person in prison. So this bill doesn't affect that threshold decision. The same people will be going to prison. But what it does do is that it means that some offenders will be spending more time in prison than they otherwise would. We would argue that those people who will be spending more time are the people who should be spending more time because we are putting the choice for consecutive sentences into a... we're restricting that choice and making those findings of aggravated circumstances a requirement in order to impose those consecutive sentences. This bill, however, will also mean that some offenders will be spending less time in prison because the judge will not be able to make the findings in aggravation to support the consecutive sentences. And finally, we think that to the extent that there is additional demands on the correctional resources as a result of this bill, because the parole board has the authority to unstack those consecutive sentences, and because the parole board will be able to make express consideration of bed space in the matrix, that there will be a control mechanism that will not result in undue crowding as a result of this particular bill.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Wouldn't the effect then be the parole board would be releasing those with not as serious offenses, and it would the people with the most serious offenses would tend to be aggregated more in the prison system?
I would think so, and I think that there's also a natural tendency of the parole board when it sees aggravated findings on the record to uphold what the judge has done, because it becomes more apparent to the parole board why the judge did what he or she did. And you're right. Correctional resources would tend to be used that way for the more serious offenders. I think it's important to remember that the defendant would have multiple safeguards against the fear of prosecutorial